Hello, everyone, and welcome to the American Ninja Warrior recap podcast for reality TV Rehap Ups. We are back after a week break here. I am your host, Taryn Armstrong, and I am here with the amazing Lita, who has also been gone for a week because that's what we both did. Neither of us were sneaky enough to record a podcast in the meantime. How are you doing, Lita?
I'm doing really well. How was your 4th of July and your week off?
I can't even remember what happened beyond the past weekend at RehabCon.
Oh, yeah. Well, do you want to give a brief overview of RehabCon, your experience?
It was awesome. There were a lot of people there. They were very, very nice people. I had an awesome time. I did a live panel for Big Brother in front of a huge audience. And that was just like the most amazing experience ever. Maybe someday, if you listeners are amazing and tell all your friends and get everyone to listen to this podcast, we can do a live podcast for this podcast, but probably not because there aren't enough of you.
Hey, not yet. Not with that attitude.
Someday, yes. Someday we will have all the listeners in the world.
Yes.
What have you been up to in this long break we had?
I had a great 4th of July. I went to Nemacolin with my mom, which is a resort that was recently featured on The Bachelorette, but is near my house. And we go to it a lot. We're not posers who started going after it was on The Bachelorette. And I have been preparing for my trip tomorrow to your home turf of Boston, visiting my first grad school. So, just getting amped up for that.
Yeah, we're going to hopefully get together at some point. That's going to be fun. We'll meet in person for the first time.
It'll
it's be weird that we haven't. Yeah.
This
is the Hollywood Studios final? Or is it Universal? Universal Studios final. I really enjoyed this episode.
With one major quibble. I enjoyed this episode.
We'll have to find out what that quibble is later.
Might be
Stay tuned.
Obstacle. Let's just say.
Yeah, so going through the obstacles, we have this pretty much the same qualifying course with just a little bit of increased difficulty. We start with the floating steps, which again, those are the pinball machine little things. You jump back and forth onto the rope. Then we got the TikTok again, which is where you swing onto the big pole in the middle and then jump away, this time with a bigger gap between the bar and the pole, and then no cargo net to grab onto when you jump from the pole to the platform. Then we have the escalator, which is the series of steps that go up and down that also swing. And one of the steps was removed, making this one more difficult as well. Then we have the ring jump, where you have to jump the rings over the pegs, reach across to the other side, jump down, and then swing across to the platform. Then we again have the I-beam cross, where you have to sort of climb up this small beam with very, very small ledges and get all the way to the other side. And then finally, the warped wall ends the qualifying section of the course. Then they move on to the new stuff for the finals, the salmon ladder, which is a staple of Ninja Warrior. You got to grab the bar, go up the rungs. It's just four rungs. There's a harder version in the final in the Las Vegas actual course. Then we move on to finally the wedge. And this is a new obstacle. Very, very strange. It has two angled sides and a bar in the middle with balls on the end. And you just kind of have to wedge the bar in between the two walls and jump it across and then make a dismount. And it sounds deceptively simple, I think.
Yeah, except that the balls make it so that the bar rolls, which makes it impossible to dismount.
Yes. So many of these athletes, if they've competed on Ninja Warrior before, they're going to be used to being able to just use their momentum to swing off of a bar and fly across to wherever they're landing. However, with the dismount on the wedge, they have to be very careful of the bar spinning along with them as they swing back and forth. And many of these athletes were not prepared for that and did not know how to, how to get through it. And I mean, and it wasn't just the dismount either. A lot of them had trouble even just getting across because you have to be very, very careful to keep the bar straight the whole time. If you're off just a little bit and you're not aligned properly, then you're just going to slip and fall straight into the water.
Yeah, I have a couple of qualms with this. The first is that, like you said, people weren't prepared for the dismount being so difficult because of how much it spins in your hands. And part of that is that you also can't really tell from watching it that that's what's going on. At least, like, in my opinion, watching it from TV, if Matt and Akbar hadn't been, like, explaining why no one was making this dismount, I wouldn't have necessarily even noticed it. So I feel like you could watch this a few times and still not be prepared for that. My other issue is that this is one of those, well, there's a lot of obstacles like this, but it's an obstacle where if you make one little mistake, it's done. You can't correct it at all. And I think I would prefer this if it was more like the salmon ladder, where if you miss on one side, you have the opportunity to correct it. This is just like, if one side is lower than the other, there's just nothing you can do. It's just going to slide down.
Yeah, I do think that was my one qualm with this obstacle, was that it was very difficult to see what was happening when they rolled their hands. Sometimes you could see it, sometimes you couldn't. And that's kind of frustrating as a my voice is still gone. That's kind of frustrating as a viewer to just kind of see someone fall and not really understand why until they tell you. And even then, it's still kind of difficult to see. That said, I do like the premise behind the obstacle. One of my favorite obstacles in Sasuke is, I believe it's called the pipe slider. It's a classic of stage three, where they have to slide a bar along two pipes, I guess. And then the dismount is made very difficult because the bar doesn't stay in place. And so instead of using their momentum to swing across, they have to use their upper body and core and just like completely push themselves with their, essentially just using body control. And it's a very, very difficult obstacle. It is the cause of many heartbreaks in Sasuke. Because it's right at the end of stage three, and I love that obstacle. And this is kind of similar to that, but again, on the pipe slider, you can see when their arms jerk back and they fail to make the jump, you see exactly why, and you immediately go like, oh no. Whereas in this obstacle, it's just like, oh, they just fell. Oh, I guess it must have rolled. Okay. So yeah, I think with some tweaks, maybe this could work a little better, but as it is, I think that it didn't quite land how they may have wanted it to.
Yeah. This was really frustrating. This was like the Rolling Thunder, where it was like, this would just be more fun to watch if it was a little bit easier, because it's not as fun to watch a course where instead of a race to the finish, it's a race to a certain obstacle to qualify. Yeah. Especially because we only got to see the last obstacle in this once, which is crazy. Anyway, there are two more obstacles.
Yes, next is the helix hang. We've seen this before, I believe. You have to grab onto the little poles, and they'll spin around. So you just have to grab to the next one, called the helix hang, because it's kind of shaped like a strand of DNA. And you have to get all the way across, basically. And then finally, the invisible ladder, where you have two rings, and you just have to keep pulling yourself all the way up to the top of the tower. Very, very difficult obstacle, very straining. And very few people have managed to complete it.
The invisible ladder frustrates me because I am really bad at physics and I like can't comprehend how this works. Like, I just watch them do it and don't understand the mechanics of it.
Basically, anytime the ring gets pulled up, it will not come back down. So they're really just trying to push it up and bring their body along with them, essentially, as they go.
It looks impossible.
It is easily, I think, one of the more difficult obstacles of any course.
But it did have a 100% success rate.
That's very true.
Last night, 1 for 1.
All right. So first up, we had Ben Antoine, the 24-year-old aerospace engineer. This guy, he failed on the I-beam in qualifying, but was hoping to complete it this time.
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah, too bad, because he didn't even make it there this time. He slips on the new escalator because of this new extra step that got taken away. He clearly just wasn't prepared for that. He slips. He catches himself with his hands, but goes down anyway.
Indeed. And I do not remember this person from qualifying.
Yeah, I don't either. I do have my notes up from the previous episode, and I don't see his name anywhere. So I think they had him here to show, like, hey, guess what? We made this harder, and it tripped someone up.
They did it.
Yes. Next up was Alan Keneally, who I believe got skipped in the previous episode for this city. He's the 35-year-old gym owner. He is one of the guys who is called the Beast, right? But not the more successful one, unfortunately. he was the largest ninja there at over 200 pounds, I believe. And he managed to jump over like half of the escalator there. This guy's pretty impressive. So I was hoping he would do well. What do you think of Alan?
I thought it was kind of odd that his whole package was like, my submission video was weird.
Yeah.
Like, don't make a video about your video to show us. I don't know. He's like in
It's not like he chose what his package was going to be.
This is me at the editors.
Yeah.
I thought that was weird. He was like at a pole dancing class and in a bubble bath and stuff.
Yeah, they appreciated it so much. They just were like, hey, well, I mean, we can't come up with anything better. Why don't we just show off what you did?
Yeah, he's zany. Not a fan of the backwards cap also. I think that's...
And he apparently like waxed his chest and then it didn't even matter. We didn't see it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was just for the pure shock of getting your chest waxed to get on American Ninja Warrior, I guess.
Because he always, I believe, uses like he'd run with his shirt off and it was always like the big hairy chest. And I was like, all right, you know, that wasn't my favorite thing to look at. Maybe it would be more enjoyable with the shaved chest, but we never got to see it. He didn't take his shirt off.
I'm so sorry for that.
I'm very disappointed.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't turn off the episode right there.
I almost did.
Yeah, I mean, other than that, like, you know, he's someone that we've seen before. I don't have a super vivid memory of anything he's done, but he was fine. I was glad that he got past that transition in the middle, because that was a big killer on the I-beam for a lot of people in qualifying. But he has one of these really disappointing falls where he gets right to the end of the obstacle.
Yeah, and he's just, he even says it, he's just too big. It's just too much weight to hold on such small little ledges. And he says he has to start climbing more. you do, because these obstacles are definitely built for the climbers. Another thing,
or
that
the
he
pole
did,
vaulters.
Or the dancers, right?
Oh, sure. That worked out.
He's the first person we see take on this ring jump, and he skips the second on the second half. He doesn't even go all the way down. He just does the dismount from halfway through. And we pretty much saw every single athlete who completed this obstacle do this. And yet every single time Matt and Akbar were like, whoa, unbelievable. he's doing an early dismount. So yeah, we'll keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, definitely.
Next is our first montage. We've got Steve Seaver, who is the Air Force veteran who got grounded by the TikTok, which is a weird way to finish off the guy who had the package last time. He was the alcoholic whose wife left him, and he wanted to prove to his kids that you can come back from rock bottom. So, unfortunate end for him there.
I don't even remember that, I will be honest.
Then we've got Sean Bryan, the Catholic school worker. You got to remember this guy, right?
Is this the Papal Ninja?
The Papal Ninja, yes.
Okay, I remember him. He had all those disgruntled Catholics mad at him for building a gym without their permission.
Exactly, and he's got the cool sleeves, but he fails at the escalator, unfortunately. Then finally, Alex Smith. And I really don't remember this guy from last time, so nothing there. And he just kind of fails at the I-beam, so down goes Alex Smith. Next up is Scott Wilson, the 26-year-old chess instructor. First thing I wrote for this guy, dreamy.
Oh my God. I'm swooning just thinking about him. I never tweet during American Ninja Warrior because I like to save all my thoughts for the podcast, but I could not help it. I had to tweet about how handsome this guy is, because... this is the biggest ninja crush I have ever had, besides maybe Jesse Graff and Meghan Martin. But he is so handsome, and he plays chess. And I played chess in elementary school. I was on the competitive chess team at my school. So
there you go. Match made in heaven.
Yeah, we have so much in common. I even have a little trophy that I got in second grade.
I saw this guy and I was like, he looks like... he's too good looking to be like a good person, right? But then he's like working with kids, playing chess. It seems like a really cool guy. Unfortunately, doesn't quite make it all the way. I knew that he would make it to the I-beam at least, because they mentioned it in the package. He this is a big thing. He really wanted to beat the I-beam, and it seemed like he wasted a little bit of time on the ring jump. But he does make it past the I-beam just to fail at the salmon ladder. And unfortunately, does not go far enough to qualify for Vegas.
Catch me tweeting at American Ninja Warrior 24/7, telling them to give him a wild card spot.
Yes.
Also, why were his knuckles bloody?
I didn't catch that.
Oh, yeah. On the I-beam, they like zoomed in on his knuckles and they were like bleeding super bad. I don't know what he did.
From all the chess playing.
Yeah, I guess. It's just a constant state for him. Yeah. Anyway, goodbye to my biggest ninja crush, who is very inactive on Twitter, which was a huge disappointment because I want to get him on the podcast just so I can ask him on a date.
We'll make it happen. Okay. next up is Natalie Duran, the 24-year-old clinical researcher and YouTuber. Her package is about training in the streets of Europe,
where they are not accepting of public displays of athleticism, apparently.
Which I thought was kind of her like subtle way of saying that like people got angry at her, right? Like people were just like, what are you, get away. Like, what are you doing?
Listen, no wonder Europe didn't win USA versus the world, because clearly they can't have public athleticism there. It's very frowned upon.
Well, then she said, like, I wanted to get back to, I think, like, California so that I can, like, be normal in the streets again. But I got to be honest, I don't know if it's just Europe, but I don't see anybody doing parkour around Boston. I think this is just a California thing.
Hanging out in the right circles.
Maybe.
People in Boston don't commute to work on their hands, just walking on their hands.
You know, I can't say I've ever seen it.
Oh, well, you should get better friends.
Well, they'd probably get frostbite, to be honest.
Yes, probably. Anyway, also not very accepting of her athleticism is this course. Transition.
No. Yeah, that was flawless.
Thank you.
People are going to be just like, wow, these guys are so professional. she did not get a good release on the TikTok and was not able to make that larger gap and falls. Disappointing finish here because, she'd been pretty hyped up in the previous episode and I thought she might do well, but not the case.
Nope.
Next up is Adam Rail, the 23-year-old construction worker. And I think he said he's a concrete farmer.
No, concrete barber.
Barber?
He shaves the concrete to make tabletops.
Okay. That's just, I thought you were like, you said no. And I was like, okay, thank God. It's going to be something I understand. And then you said something that's even more confusing to me.
No, I minor in concrete barbership at school. So that's really offensive. No, he shaves like, I don't know, not raw, but concrete in its form to like into countertops and things that are like smooth and shiny. That's a job that people have.
I don't want anybody to be shaving me with whatever they're shaving the concrete with. I'm just going to say that.
Okay. Well, that's your choice. This made me not understand at all how the walkout line works, because he was saying that all they were eating was peanut butter and jelly and doing hot yoga so that they could shower. But if you have time to go to yoga, can't you go get food?
They should have time to get food.
Why were they only eating peanut butter and jellies? I don't understand. If you can pay for, I go to yoga. Yoga is expensive. If you can pay for hot yoga, you can get some real food.
Well, maybe they were spending all their money on the hot yoga and then they didn't have enough left for food.
Yeah. Well, clearly.
He did say he was waiting in line for 2.5 weeks, which is nuts. I don't know. Like, I guess, you know, being a concrete barber with your family, you get lots of time off, I guess.
Yeah. When your family is your boss.
I liked his package. He talked about, he seemed very like humble about it, right? He wasn't like, I'm going to become the next American Ninja Warrior. He was like, yeah, I think I might have a shot to make it to Vegas. Like, I think that's probably my upside, which is very like reasonable. And he showed, he had a very good showing. He was very strong, very quick through the first obstacles, had like an awesome matrix move on the ring jump when he dismounted, like, you know, got his head out of the way just in the nick of time.
Yeah.
Pretty good showing on the course.
Thank God he didn't say that his job prepared him for American Ninja Warrior.
Exactly.
I would have torn my hair out.
He didn't say anything like that. It was very, very reasonable interview. During the wedge, he's, I believe, the first person to make it to the wedge. Akbar says, know your alphabet. That's a perfect L. You need the whole alphabet on the wedge.
Yeah, they really kept going with that alphabet thing. Like later they were like, what letter of the alphabet does he need? He needs L's, Matt. Like, oh no, those are eyes. Like, okay,
exactly. Yeah. and like it's especially confusing because he said you need the whole alphabet on the wedge, but I'm pretty sure you just need the L's, right? Like, you don't want anything else other than L's. Maybe Z's
on the wedge.
Certainly no Z's. Yes.
Yeah. Or Q's.
He is the first to fail on this dismount. It's a very difficult one because that bar isn't locked in place. However, he was very correct when he said he had a shot at making Vegas because he does qualify.
Yes, he does. Good for him and his what appeared to be denim cutoffs he was wearing. His pants, they were black, but they looked like denim.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
I always notice the fashion.
It's all on you if you're wrong.
Yeah, that's true.
Next, we have our second montage. First up is Liam Buell, who is the beekeeper who got stung by the wedge.
And he does like a flip off of it. Yes. He like went all the way around.
I mean, that was from the sting.
Yeah, that's true. It really startled him. This is a two-person montage. I haven't noticed this before. Is that rare?
It's the first one this season, I believe.
Okay, yeah, just making sure. That feels odd.
And despite being montaged, he is a qualifier for the finals, or for the Las Vegas finals. As is Ben Milik, the next montager. He's the Tarzan guy who also fails at the wedge.
Indeed.
Next, we get Nicholas Coolridge. We join him a little bit late in his run. He's the 27-year-old acrobatics performer. He was the only finisher in last year's Venice finals and does manage to qualify again this year, but does not finish this time because, again, he fails at the wedge. He lands that bar unevenly and he goes straight down.
Yes. And this is the guy who is the dumpster diver who lives in his van. But apparently he's now a social media star on Instagram. He has like a ton of followers. And if I know anything from following Bachelor contestants on Instagram, it's that you can get paid for Instagramming advertisements all the time. So I hope he's making some money off of that. But I like this guy. He looked like he was floating through the I-beam.
He really flew through that.
Insane upper body strength. We had a stupid Akbarism. He's a different cat. He's got that dog in him. It doesn't make any sense. I don't even know if I wrote that down right. It's not.
He's the hybrid.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. But yeah, he goes out on the wedge like everyone else, but he got there really fast, it seemed like.
Yes, very good time.
Yeah.
Next up, this one hurt. It was Brian Kretsch, the 32-year-old gym manager. Pretty sad package here. He had to rehab his leg after last season. And then, you know, right as he's finishing that up, his mom gets diagnosed with cancer. I talked about in the previous episode how much I like Brian Kretsch. I was really pumped up for this package. I was like, man, this is a good package. He's going to go far. He's completed in all 8 seasons. But he slips on the escalator. It just seemed like he psyched himself out here. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, it not only does he go out on the escalator step, he goes out in a way that looks like it would be really painful on his recovering knee. So thank God he did not get injured there. But I think that was everyone's immediate response. And when he goes down to Christine, she says, you know, first of all, are you okay? And he says, physically, which is never a good start. He says, yeah, I'm okay. But he is just in total emotional distress because of this.
Yeah. And I have to imagine that, you know, after what happened last year, he was really nervous about this obstacle in particular. It seemed like he was kind of dreading it. And I think he just got in his head. He tried to make the jump over the second half too early and ended up landing on the last step instead of the platform with both feet. And he just goes down and he is so devastated. I hate seeing this, especially from an awesome guy like Brian Kretsch. But, you know, he's been here for the whole thing and he'll be here next time and hopefully have a better outcome.
Yeah. We can only hope that production will let him keep coming back because we've had some issues there with some of the veterans.
Yes. Next is Jesse LaFleur in the montage. He fails at the salmon ladder. Jesse LaFleur, who has competed in a lot of seasons, typically does decently well. He was one of the first sort of like YouTube parkour stars that the show had, but very little airtime this season and fails at the salmon ladder, says he needs to work on his grip strength.
Sounds like a good plan.
Definitely. We also get Jonathan Cunanan, who failed at the wedge, and Jesse Cargill, who also fails at the wedge and is now the 6th person to fail at that wedge.
And he brought the bar down with him, which was cool.
Did he?
Yeah, he was still holding the bar when he fell.
And next is Chris Workman, the 32-year-old app developer. He has a nice little package about his son here. This one really got to me. It seems very genuine.
Yeah. Did we not have a package from him before?
His name sounded very familiar.
Yeah. Maybe it was the thing where we like came in during his run or something. Cause I feel like I remember this guy. But Yeah, I mean, he seems like a really nice guy. He was away from his family and just moved back to Vegas. And they showed, you know, his whole family having dinner together, which I always think is nice when the whole family is supportive. He does a little Charleston on top of the Warped Wall.
I noted that. I you know, I was watching this thinking like a lot of people are failing at the wedge. That seems to be the cutoff. It's going to be who gets there the fastest. And this guy's wasting time at the top of the wall right before that obstacle. What are you doing?
Yeah, that's true. I think I would have been more mad about that at the time, except that I was really expecting him to beat the wedge because there was sort of like a buildup when they got back from the commercial that seemed like a post-production Matt and Akbar thing where it was like, if only someone could get past this obstacle. You know, it was one of those things. And I really thought that he was going to, but I was wrong.
Yeah, and I did find him in my previous notes. He was a montage person in the last episode. Okay. So yes, no package, but we did briefly talk about him.
Yeah, just a memorable name, I guess.
Yeah, and what he does on the wedge, he makes these small little hops, and I think that seems to be like the best way to do it. Mm-hmm. Most of the people who did somewhat decently on this obstacle, or made it to the end of it at least, were doing those small little hops. You don't want to get too ahead of yourself on that obstacle. And another thing about this guy, very, very short. I mean, I don't want to call him, I don't want to call 5'4" short, but he's 5'4".
I think that's fair. I think you're allowed to call him that. He's taller than I am.
The diplomatic way of saying that was he's 5'4". Yeah.
Hey, he's taller than me. So
there you go.
Good for him. All right. Next, we have the most important thing that we're going to see all night. Oh, yeah. Thank God we get to see Akbar at Harry Potter World.
Yeah.
Because what would this episode have been without that?
It wasn't the whole thing last time that like Akbar was like, oh, I'm so jealous that you got to go. Like, I didn't get to go. Or did we just talk about that?
I don't know. I think that my major complaint was more the waste of time than Akbar not being included. I enjoyed this segment a little bit more because Akbar's children are adorable.
Very much so.
I would have liked to see more of his wife. She was there.
Was she? I didn't even know that she was there.
Or some lady that was traveling with them. I would have liked to see more of this random woman's story that they found.
I feel like they could have made this into something like where like we get to learn a little bit more about our hosts while having an advertisement. Like that could have been, you know, something. It wouldn't have felt so, you know, cheap, right?
Yeah. But
instead, it was just like, look how great super silly Funland is.
There's so many minions there. I don't know. I think they might be really like milking the, this is family friendly programming. Even though it's on the Esquire network sometimes.
And again, I'm sure this was part of like the deal for having the course built there.
Yeah. In the middle of a movie set, as they said, which doesn't sound right.
Yeah. They probably closed down production just for American Ninja Warrior.
Yeah. That's why Suicide Squad coming out a little bit late because they had to build an American Ninja Warrior set right in the middle.
Yes. So Chris Workman, he does fail. Did I mention that Chris Workman qualified?
You did not. Good for him.
Okay.
We had to get, I was too much in a rush to get to the most important segment.
All right. So yes, after the Harry Potter and Super Silly Funland segment, we got Grant McCarthy. I said it again. I did it twice. It's written the right way this time too. Grant McCartney, the 27-year-old flight attendant, had a whole package about skateboarding in India.
Yes. As an avid player of Tony Hawk Pro Skater for Nintendo 64, that's not a joke. I really appreciated this because I know a lot about skateboarding.
I was an avid player of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater on the PlayStation. So
that's weird because you're older than me. So
it was one of my first games I played, actually, video games. After Pokemon.
Well, I guess I'm a little more hipster than you. Still going with the older systems. But anyway, so he went to build a skate park in India where I believe he got sick. I think they mentioned that in the qualifying that he had gotten very sick in India, but they didn't mention it this time.
Yeah, look at that. Making those connections.
Well, he's like one of the only people who I remember. I'm kidding. Everybody is special and I remember them all.
Graham McCartney does lots of the dancing. I don't know what it's called. I forget.
He does the nay-nay.
The nay-nay. Yes. I don't know the difference between nay-nay and dabbing and twerking. I don't know. They're all weird.
Well, he does not twerk. Thank God.
Okay, good. Yes, he makes it. He goes onto the I-beam, spends a lot of time there. He uses his chinny chin chin to rest on that transition in the middle.
With his dad chanting, use that chin.
Yeah, trying to get that chant going, but I didn't hear it catch on. So he does complete the I-beam, but again, he spent a lot of time on it. He almost fails on the warped wall. He almost falls, at least. He slips, but manages to grab on and then gets to the wedge and really just slams like face first into the platform on the dismount.
Yeah, that looked really painful. Also, about the warped wall, I think maybe that quick dab honestly like threw off his rhythm or something, because it looked like he went straight in from the dab into running, and it looked like he was just like a little bit off balance or something. I feel like if he had been a little shorter, he would not have made that first attempt. I feel like it was because he didn't take a moment to like prepare for it. I don't know.
Should have gone with the twerk instead of the dab, I guess.
I think that would have wasted a lot more time. Yeah, the only other thing was that he made quick work of the ring jump, because he has this massive wingspan and he's able to bring the ring over like almost all of the pegs while still holding on to the other one. So that's one of those obstacles that's a huge advantage to larger people.
Yeah, and he was somebody on this dismount from the wedge. You could see that I don't think he rolled the bar too much. It was that he was trying to do the correct thing, which is using his body to get across, but he didn't. He had no forward momentum when he made the dismount. He just went up and then kind of flopped forward, which I think that people who maybe, like, I think somebody like Drew Dreschel, who I'm sure has trained on things similar to the pipe slider, would have known the correct technique to make this dismount. But Grant McCartney, unfortunately, I imagine just hasn't trained on anything like this before.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to forget that he's still so new at this, just because he's so talented and so proficient, but he's still pretty green to this competition.
Yes. Next, we have another special montage here. It's wedge fails.
It's the montage of pain.
Yes. We got very, very briefly Jared Wharf and Ryan Robinson as two people who failed at the wedge. That's 10 failures total at the wedge, and nobody has beat it. 10 people have tried, 10 people have failed. And next up is Jessie Graff, the 32-year-old stunt woman.
And I'm surprised she is not closer to the end of the episode.
Well, I mean, she had to be the first to beat the wedge.
Yeah, that's true. Her package did make me cry. This is the type of thing, in case anyone is trying to nail down what makes me cry, it's not as much the sad stuff as like moving stuff, like people like supporting each other, overcoming obstacles, and having all the clips of like Casey and different people like saying what an inspiration she is really got to me.
Yes, they seem like Jessie Graff is their woman this season. She talked about being, you know, known as the top woman competitor. We got Jessie Lebrecq and Casey Catanzaro testimonials, and yeah, this was a lot of hype, and she did absolutely live up to it. I mean, really not even much to say. She very systematically goes through the course. She goes straight up the warped wall. Matt says that could have been 16 feet and she still could have gotten it. And I believe it. She really ran up that thing like Flip would have.
Yeah, she has a backwards technique on the ring jump that we haven't seen yet. But I mean, for a second, I was like, what is she doing? And then I was like, no one just like attempts that without knowing what they're doing. Like, this is clearly something she's trained on, and this is the technique that she uses. And it worked out for her. She does a somersault off the TikTok, which I thought was cool.
Very cool.
Supernatural, putting those what's her job? Stunt woman. That's what it's called. Into action.
Yes. And then she makes it all the way up the salmon ladder onto the wedge. She does those small little hops, gets all the way to the end, and perfect dismount. No trouble whatsoever.
Yes.
Something that I think really helped her here that I saw her do and very little I don't think I really even saw anybody else do this was she had a reverse grip on the wedge, which probably made it a lot more difficult to get across because it's harder to keep that bar steady and straight. But when it came to the dismount, I think it helped her keep the bar from rolling out from under her. And that's why her dismount was so easy.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I never noticed that. I did notice for the first time in this one. I mean, I guess I had noticed, but it didn't really register with me how killer it must be for the salmon ladder to go straight into the wedge. Like, I think that's underreported how much of an absolute killer that is.
Especially because they're coming straight off of, you know, holding on with their fingers on the ring jump, then on the I-beam, really just the fingertips, and then straight onto the salmon ladder where your grip is tested even more, then straight to that one. It's just, it's grip, grip, grip all the way through, and there's very, very little break there. Especially when, you know, when, like you said, you go straight from the salmon ladder to the wedge, and there's no rest whatsoever. You're just going straight into it, and you just got to hope that your grip holds out.
Yeah. And I mean, she's just amazing. And she shows us the helix for the first time, which is an obstacle that I really like. And I would have liked to see more of it.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one.
Yeah, I think it's fun to watch. But she goes out halfway through the helix. But I mean, this is just, I mean, we don't get to see women be the pioneer of an obstacle like ever. And since the wedge was new, she was the first person to ever complete this obstacle. And that's just, I love that. And this was just really inspiring because it's taking women from just being able to complete it to being able to complete it with, you know, the best time so far, or being the only person to complete something, rather than like just scraping into qualifying.
Yeah. And that's a good point, because she ends up being the highest ranked woman ever. When she places second overall in the entire finals course.
Yeah, and I believe she did something similar last year where she was either the first or one of the first to beat an obstacle, but she didn't end up quite as high as she was. And I mean, obviously, Matt and Akbar were making such a big deal out of it. I don't need to reiterate this, but, you know, not just holding her own with the men, but actually, like, beating almost all of them and beating some legends here tonight.
Yeah, and this is the case where they're really not overhyping her, right? Where, like,
yeah,
they're talking about how she's not just a woman competitor who is, you know, the best woman necessarily. She is really genuinely just one of the people who is competing and doing really well at these obstacles. Next is Gabe Hurtado, the 31-year-old shoe salesman who just a few months ago, prior to this taping, lost everything to a fire in his house. And that's got to be pretty devastating.
Yeah, especially because he has children. And yeah, this was a quick tone shift.
Yeah.
From Jesse Graf. But there is some good news for Gabe Hurtado, because he does qualify despite, as you can probably guess, going out on the wedge.
Yes. He was very light on his feet the whole way through. He was very quick, had great body control. He got he had a very, very close call on the ring jump on that dismount. He just, like, he managed to, like, get his feet just on the platform and then just like throw his body over, which I thought was very impressive. But he does fail immediately on the wedge. He just has an uneven landing on his first jump. It seems like there's a learning curve on the wedge. A lot of people failed on that first hop, and a lot of people were uneven on their first hop. And it was just a matter of, like, whether or not you were a little bit too uneven and you couldn't correct, or you learned from your mistake and then you were able to get across all the way. But he was not one of those people. But as you said, despite that, he still manages to qualify, and his adorable family just, like, breaks down in tears when they find out. Great moment.
Yeah, I am very happy that he qualified after they showed us that really devastating package.
Yeah. Next up is Nick Hansen, the 28-year-old coach. He is the Eskimo Ninja. We come in a little late to his run, but I like this guy. Akbar says when he's on the I-beam, look how far he's traveling. Uber couldn't get you that far.
I don't get it. What is his relationship to Uber?
Maybe he's getting paid off by the taxi unions to, like,
to diss Uber.
Yeah.
For not getting you as far as Nick Hansen.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he like gets to the wedge in the most technical sense. He gets to the obstacle and then just, like, doesn't move and immediately falls. And this is what I was talking about with the Rolling Thunder, where I think it kind of sucks that someone who got to the obstacle and fell immediately could qualify, whereas someone who got to the very end of a really hard obstacle and falls could not, just because of the time difference in getting there. I don't love that. I like Nick Hansen, nothing against him personally, but it just feels unfair when someone gets to the end of a really challenging obstacle and doesn't qualify over someone who, you know, barely attempted it.
Yeah. And he, I mean, he just grabbed on and couldn't even try to move.
Yeah.
That was how gone his grip strength was. I mean, kudos for him to getting that far. But yeah, as you said, there were people that made it further in the wedge, who did not qualify because they didn't get there as fast as he did. So, strange situation there. Ideally, they don't have to deal with this because there's not one obstacle that's taking everybody out. But, when that happens, we run into situations like this.
Yeah.
Next up, Flip Rodriguez, the 26-year-old stuntman, and whoa.
Yeah, this is really, really important. And we are probably not the people to deal with this topic super delicately. But I do want to take a little bit of time on this because American Ninja Warrior does talk about itself a lot as being a program that changes lives and inspires people. And this is the first moment that I've seen in my whole time watching the show where I thought this is actually going to change people's lives. Because for people who didn't watch the episode that are maybe listening, Flip talked about how the reason that he wore a mask for so long was because he was sexually abused from ages 9 to 15. And the mask was sort of representative of what many survivors do, which is mask their pain, stay silent. They don't talk about it. And we live in a culture where it's hard for any victims of sex abuse to come forward and talk about it. And especially in a culture of toxic masculinity where men are embarrassed to say it, where they feel like they won't be believed or they won't be empathized with. So having an athlete and an inspiration, someone who works with children, with, you know, some level of fame and a platform, come forward and talk about this and not be ashamed of it and say that it's not his fault. This was something that I am so glad that he did and that American Ninja Warrior did. And that I just really want to express my support for.
I remember when he was first introduced in the early seasons of American Ninja Warrior, and he talked about, you know, having a rough childhood, and that's why he had the mask as sort of this creative expression. And that was one of the reasons why I really identified with him personally, because, you know, it's something that I think a lot of people can identify with, especially if you didn't have the greatest childhood. And it was something that I could really sort of latch onto. I've loved Flip ever since, and it's heartbreaking and heartwarming at the same time to see him have the strength to come out about this. And I really hope that he does inspire a lot of people to be able to do the same and to get through whatever it is they're going through, because you can survive anything. You can rise above anything that you've gone through. And I think that's a really important message to get across. And I'm really, really glad that Flip is helping spread that message.
Yeah. And it really put a new perspective on his work with children and how, I mean, we've seen his passion for that and how important it is. And he got so emotional when he was saying, you know, there's someone out there that can help you. I will help you. Like, this is such a personal mission for him. And I am just so in awe of how brave this was.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, on the course, you know, does really well as Flip does. There's some funny aquarisms that don't seem super appropriate at the moment.
I wasn't even listening. What did he say?
Well, he's going along the I-beam and he's like, look at him slide along there like a snake, like a daddy long leg.
Those things are not related.
Yeah.
And neither are known for being slippery.
Yeah. Well, I mean, slippery snakes, that's a thing, right?
Snakes are dry.
Are they?
They're reptiles.
All right. I feel like I've heard slippery snake before. Maybe it's just the alliteration.
Yeah, maybe.
But yeah, he goes all the way to the wedge, and he fails at the dismount here. This is one where the bar clearly just rolls straight out of his hands. It seemed like he was just about to make the dismount. I think if he had gone one swing earlier, he might have made it. But he just wanted to be extra sure that he had the right momentum, but that it was just a little bit too far, and the bar slides out, and he does fall here.
But he qualifies.
Yes, he is a top qualifier here.
Yes.
Next up, we get another montage. I believe this is the last montage of the episode. First up is Jackson Meyer, the Boy Scout.
My favorite.
He made it all the way to the wedge here. Surprisingly good for this guy. I wasn't expecting that.
I was just glad we didn't get another roadkill package.
Well, I'm seriously impressed by Jackson Meyer here, and he does qualify for Vegas, which we're gonna be seeing more of the Boy Scout.
Good.
We also get Justin Hilston, who also fails at the wedge and also qualifies for Vegas.
Indeed.
Next up, the man, the myth, the legend, Josh Levin. He is the engineering student, 22 years old. One of the country's top rock climbers. He's won 19 national competitions since he was 4 years old as a rock climber. He completed the qualifier in the first round. He was montaged though. And he also has a rock climbing coach, who has a degenerative lung disease. Emotional story here. A pretty good package. I thought, I was definitely pulling for this guy. And I was also thinking, this is the guy. He's going to complete the course.
Yeah. He's also from your neck of the woods.
Yeah.
He's an engineer at Northeastern. This sort of explained why he was montaged earlier. They wanted to save this package. His rock climbing coach has already had one lung transplant, and now she's waiting on a second, which is, really scary. And she was remaining positive, but saying that things haven't been going well for her. But they showed her watching him via Skype or FaceTime or whatever. His family was showing her his run. And it's always good to see someone, running for someone else metaphorically. And this time it really, really paid off.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure I heard that he is one of these people who has been waiting to get on the show for a long time. He wanted to do it as soon as he was 21, but he injured his shoulder. Mm-hmm. and wasn't able to do it. And I'm always very high on the big fans of the show because they know very well, like they've been training for a long time for these specific obstacles. Like that's how they're like, they spent the formative years of their athleticism training for this specifically. And so I feel like they really have a leg up, and I'm really always pulling for those guys. Probably again, because I can relate to them as somebody who watched as a kid and always wanted to do it. I'm not quite at their level, but maybe someday.
And he has sort of a wild dismount off of the wedge, but he makes it. He was really this whole time, I was hoping he would, obviously I was hoping he would finish, but I was sort of, more confident that he would because he was going at the slow pace, but you could really see that, this was someone who was capable of doing all these more quickly, but he was going for the finish. This wasn't someone who was just going to speed to the wedge just to qualify.
Yeah. He was very deliberate about, his approach, and it was very effective for him. I thought like his dismount on the wedge, as I mentioned with the pipe slider, it was very similar to how the Japanese competitors usually dismount on the pipe slider. It wasn't like Jesse's dismount, which seemed like just kind of a normal dismount. It was very much just using everything in his body to push himself off of the bar, which I thought was very impressive and shows that he really knows what he's doing when it comes to this sort of obstacle. Mm-hmm. And the course as a whole. He also had, he was very quick through the first half of the helix hang. He really started to slow down by the end, but he did make it through. And really just on the invisible ladder, interesting technique here. He didn't utilize his biceps much at all. He kept his arms pretty straight and just kind of inched up the whole way. And at first I thought like, oh, this is great technique, but he did, like many people, like pretty much everybody does, slow down toward the end, but he did get his feet all the way up through that hole and becomes the first and only finisher of the night.
Yeah. And in a tight race for crazy healthy run of the night, that was not tight at all. he managed to clinch it. So
yes,
good for Josh Levin.
Finally, we have Kevin Bull, the 31-year-old stock trader who he failed at the invisible ladder last year, hoping for some revenge, but does not get it. Even though he completed the qualifier with the fastest time, he also fails at the wedge like many others.
Yes, like so many before him. And not to keep nitpicking on these Akbarisms, but Akbar says it's a bullish market, which isn't a phrase. He could have said a bull market and we would have gotten it.
I heard that and I thought about writing it down and I was like, I know Lita's going to be on top of this one.
Not that I'm so glad I was right. Stickler for economic terms, but I mean,
I'm pretty sure you pointed out something similar about a market thing that he'd said before. So.
Well, you can only make the same joke with slightly different variations so many times.
There you go. Yeah, he did have a crazy dismount on the ring jump. He just like went for it and just like flew like he had wings. It was crazy.
Yeah, he loves those crazy dismounts.
Yeah, he flails around a lot. He's got one of those like very enthusiastic sort of like body language types. He's always fun to watch.
Yeah, definitely. So he's out at the wedge and he qualifies, and it's sort of a weird note to go out on, but that's fine.
Yeah, and he is the fastest to the wedge. He was clearly making sure that he got there fast enough, which is very smart of him. More people should have been using that strategy.
Instead of Charlestoning on top of the warped wall?
Yes, exactly. But yes, Kevin Bull, fastest time to the wedge. He is the number three qualifier for Vegas. And that is our episode. As I said, I liked this episode a lot. Despite the wedge, I thought the packages really worked well. I liked who we saw. It didn't seem like there were too many just like over the top kind of sob stories or anything like that. It was very much about the runs and I really enjoyed it. I thought this was a good one.
Yeah. I think it was a little bit of a mixed bag. There weren't as many like, why are they showing us this packages, which is obviously a symptom of it being a finals course rather than a qualifying course. And the only one that I was like, this is kind of weird, was the chess guy, but I was not complaining. but I think my only issue with it was that we saw just so many of the same run over and over again. And, you know, obviously I've already complained about the wedge, but I don't know if it was... You know, they couldn't have put it in any different order. It would have been the same thing. This wedge took out like half the people there. So I don't know what they could have done, but it's not as fun for me to not see the progression with every obstacle, just get to a point and just hit a wall. However, I thought that Flip's story was amazing. I thought that was a highlight of the whole time I've been watching the show for me. Jesse Graff showing up was incredible to watch. So overall, a very strong episode.
Yes, that does it here. However, another thing that took place over this 2-week break was Sasuke 32. It aired.
It happened.
I watched it. I know Lita didn't watch all of it, but you did watch Casey's run, right?
I did, yeah.
Yes, that was pretty amazing. Casey Catanzaro very nearly completes stage one of Sasuke, just times out right at the end, which is further than she's gotten in Vegas, and really, really impressive. I honestly think, you know, she had a very strong showing there, and I think it really proves that Casey's ability has not gone anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. I think that she was in Japan, like the spotlight was off of her. You know, she's not like the big name that she is in the US when she's in Japan. And I think because of that, she was able to let loose a little more and she really did really well there. I hope that she can take that and bring it to Vegas this year.
Yeah. And maybe people there aren't bombarding her with questions about her ex-boyfriend.
Yeah. Well, she was actually there with her ex-boyfriend.
Well, but I feel like they're less of a hot couple there. They probably aren't as big a deal.
Yes. As I mentioned, Brent Stephenson was there. He was the first to complete the first stage of that course. One of very few, only eight people completed the first stage of Sasuke. And yes, I will be talking about Sasuke for like 2 minutes now. So if you don't care about Sasuke, thank you for joining us. Follow us on Twitter. I am at Armstrong Terran. Lita is at newsaf_intern. Subscribe to us, American Ninja Warrior, Rehap Ups. Thank you so much for joining us. Time for Sasuke.
Yeah. And for those listening, I'm hanging up right now too. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So Brent was the first one to complete the first stage and one of four foreigners to complete the first stage. And there were only eight completions of the first stage as a whole, which was nuts.
Can I be the voice of the listeners who have not seen this? By foreigners Is it only Americans or are there people from other countries?
Other countries too. There was a guy from Sweden and where's the other guy from? Like Indonesia or something. He's like the crazy like dancer guy who wears like flowers or something on his head. He was a total rookie last season. Had no idea what was going on. Couldn't even speak Japanese. And so like the translation was totally off. He had no idea what he was doing, but he made it all the way to the third stage just on like pure athleticism. And we had pretty high hopes for him going into this one, but didn't quite perform. I think he failed on the third stage because it was so wet, which is a huge story of Sasuke 32. Just the course was wet the whole time. The first stage, super wet. Drew Dreschel was there. He ran the first stage, had a hard time getting through it because it was soaked. It was just ridiculous. He tried running up the warped wall and his feet were just sliding all over the place to the point where he stopped and was just like, guys, this is way too wet. Like, we need to stop this. But despite that, he still managed to get up the warped wall and complete it just in the nick of time. But after he ran, they had to shut it down and complete the rest of the runs the next day because it was just too wet. Like nobody could do it. And another big story of this tournament was Makoto Nagano, the legend, probably the most well-known person in all of Ninja Warrior. This was his final run. He's retiring. And he hasn't been able to complete the first stage in a long time. And he came like a second away from completing it on his final run. I was in tears. I'm not going to lie. It was a really emotional. Everybody in the crowd was in tears. Again, it was sort of the thing where it's like, you know, it was heartbreaking, but also it was like, what a great showing for his final run. Like he's getting a little old for this. And what a great way to exit. So yeah, awesome, awesome first stage there. Second stage was super disappointing. Everybody completed it. There was like nobody had any issues. They montaged through half of it. Then they got to the third stage. And this should be of interest to you. They had a new cliffhanger. So they introduced the crazy cliffhanger a few tournaments ago where you go across and then you make that jump. You go from, you know, one ledge to the other. And that was introduced in the US after it was introduced in Japan. We've seen that now on the previous season where many of the American competitors would make that jump and they'd do it forwards. Mm-hmm. And we only saw Joe Morofsky attempt it backwards because he hadn't trained on it going forwards. And in Japan, you're not allowed to go forward. You have to go backwards. So you have to make the jump, turn around, grab the ledge behind you. And very few people have managed to complete that. It's very, very difficult. And so they decided to ramp up the difficulty here. They had the cliffhanger go, the crazy cliffhanger, you jump from one to the other side, then you go around a curve, and then you have to make another jump to a moving cliffhanger. It's moving up and down, and you have to jump backwards onto it.
How is it like electronically or?
Yes, so it's just like a regular, you know, cliffhanger wall would be with a little ledge, and there's mechanics that are moving it slowly up and down. So you have to not only make a second jump, which nobody has ever done before, but you have to do it onto a moving platform, having to look behind you and do the jump. So like not only that, but then you have to go straight into the vertical limit, which is another very, very grip intensive obstacle.
It sounds like
with no break.
It's not a coincidence that Sasuke and Mario Party minigames were made in the same country. Sounds
yes,
like
exactly.
One inspires the other.
Yeah, very difficult. We did not expect anybody to complete this obstacle the first time around because it was just insane. And many people, Brent, I believe, got there but failed in the first transition. Many other people failed before they got there. And then the course was so wet that a lot of people, including the wreath guy, failed just because bars kept slipping all over the place. And that was really unfortunate. However, our man, Drew Dreschel, yours and probably mine as well, our pick to take down the American Ninja Warrior course, made it all the way to that cliffhanger and was the very first person to ever complete this like super ultimate crazy cliffhanger. Incredible how he flew across, made the jump immediately, went to the next one, made the second transition to the moving cliffhanger ledge. It was incredible. He did fail immediately on the next obstacle because there's no break. But I mean, he's legendary at this point. He's now the only person to have ever cleared this obstacle. And I believe one of the only people to clear a new version of the cliffhanger on its first appearance, which is it's a very, very rare if it's ever been done before. So Drew Dreschel, the star of Sasuke 32, be on the lookout for this guy.
That is my boy. I'm proud of him.
So anyone who is not interested in Sasuke and still here, I'm sorry. and I'm sorry to you as well, Lita.
Oh, no, it was a great dramatic monologue.
Yes. But yeah, that was a great experience. I really recommend that anyone who likes American Ninja Warrior check out Sasuke. It's just a couple hours, the entire tournament. And you can probably find it on YouTube now, or you can go to SasukeManiacs.com, I believe. It's a forum. And if you ask around there, they've got some links that they can share with you. Really fun. I definitely recommend anyone check it out. And yes, that is officially the end of our episode. I will say again, please subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some awesome 5-star ratings or however many stars you want. We'll take anything at this point. It's very, very helpful. And if you want, you can also subscribe to the Reality TV Rehap Ups feed and get all those other extra goodies with like the Reality TV Happy Hour that I am a part of with Jordan Parhar. We've been talking about Big Brother, the live feeds. We had a great show last night. Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I listen. I'm a fan.
Yeah, how do you think it went?
I don't listen to last night's, but
oh, well, there you go.
I usually listen. I'm behind
it's
on
just like Big Brother.
I'm behind on everything. I'm probably doing an Orange Is the New Black podcast next week, and that I was not prepared for. So I've been binging like a crazy person.
Look at that. Lita's career is on the rise.
Yeah. Someday I'll be on the IMDb of podcasting.
Hopefully she'll remember us little guys when she's the star of RHAP.
We'll see.
All right. So thank you everyone for listening. I really appreciate it. I met quite a few, and by quite a few, I mean like three or four people who listened to this podcast
in
Chicago. Yeah, there were all four of them were there. they were super excited. I talked American Ninja Warrior quite a lot there. So that was pretty exciting.
I hope they said only wonderful things about me.
Yeah, insanely wonderful things. They were just like, Taryn, what are you doing on that podcast? Why isn't it just Lita?
Why am I slumming it with you?
Yes. So yes, thank you everyone who came out to Chicago. Thank you everyone who's listening right now. And we will see you next time.